And hello, this is Chris Parker with the Business Simplicity Podcast. And I had a conversation with Remy Armand Colares from Connective Partners. And we got into what is called connective leadership, where it's creating space for healthy organizations, more fun, and more productivity. But hey, Remy Armand, why would this be valuable for people to listen to?
Well, if I talk to people, I find out that everyone gets enthusiastic about creating a better world for your kids, for next generations, but also for ourselves, for the community around us. And I think a great place to start would be our working environments, creating healthier working environments, because we spend a lot of time there. And how great would it be if like everyone would get up in the morning and be enthusiastic about going to work, because you can really make a difference there. And I think connective leadership is a very important ingredient to be able to create that great future where people go to work just for fun, for growth, for really getting social support and being able to create something that really makes a difference together and being proud about that.
And we have fun with it. We go down a lot of different rabbit holes. We talk about conceptual concepts as well as very practical tactics and advice. So.
The Business Simplicity Podcast, where leaders share their most successful strategies and the failures that inspired them, so business owners and managers can avoid the suffering and reap the benefits. With your host, Chris Parker.
And welcome back to the Business Simplicity Podcast. This is Chris Parker, and I'm having a conversation with Remy Armand Colares, who is a partner with Connective Partners. And we're going to play around with what is connective leadership today. And I'm really looking forward to that. Remy Armand, I've known for a number of years. I'm not quite sure where I first met you, maybe at an XP Days or an Agile event.
Yeah, at XP Days. Yeah.
XP Days.
The greatest Agile event of the year. It's
the greatest Agile event of the year. And for people in the Netherlands or the Benelux region, XP Days is coming up in November, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can find that, I believe, at xpdays.nl. So you can learn. Is that the website, I think? We'll put the website on the show notes, and XP is in, I think, originally extreme programming.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's more general, agile, new ways of working, 2-day event. It's really nice.
Yeah. And the cool thing about the event is that all the people who join in, all the participants, also do the presentations. So it's really,
It's really nice. It's a nice energy. And last year it was in Luxembourg. This year, I think it's in the Netherlands somewhere.
The Netherlands, yeah.
Yeah. So I think you can also already tell with Remy Armand, we will very easily get distracted and go down rabbit holes. So we're already talking about XP Days. But before we go into that, what I know about Remy Armand is he has been a coach for many organizations. He's been advising organizations, including like the Dutch National Police and maybe other large complex organizations like that.
Yeah, the tax department for Germany and
always doing it with a delightful smile, and so and that's part of who he is. And there's a quote on his website, and we'll put the website links on the show notes. It's connectivepartners.pro. But it says, don't take yourself, your practices, and your frameworks too seriously. And so we're going to get into some practices and frameworks, and we're going to try not to take them too seriously. And we're going to try to keep them very practical as well.
Yeah.
Maybe Remy Armand, share just a little bit before we get into what is connective leadership, what's your mission and purpose, and how are you investing your time in that? Because you're involved in a lot of different activities. between coaching, consulting, sustainability, and dogs. There's coaching and consulting with dogs. We'll have fun with that as well. But how do you describe, Remy Armand, what is it that you do and why you do it?
Yeah. Well, if I look at my mission in life, it would be to leave a better world, let's say for my daughter and for next generations, and hopefully for ourselves as well. And we have a little bit of benefit about that as well. And the area where I try to do that is at work. So create healthier workspaces for people to work in so they can, so they get the opportunity to, in collaboration with others, just make more of a difference and have the feeling that they make more of a difference. And I think that will really change the world if everyone would just go to work for fun. Let's go to work for fun and really make a difference there. Because we spend a lot of our time, at work. So why make that the best experience possible?
And what I like about your description, and we talked about before we press record, concepts of anti-movements. And what I didn't hear you say is to make work suck less. You were talking about, hey, how do we make work fun? Or how can people show up to work to have fun and joy? And is that what connective leadership is all about? Is
I think that's a very important part, because when we're talking, when we're communicating, what we do a lot in the Netherlands and perhaps all over the world is focus on problems. Mm-hmm. But focusing on problems, everything that you spend attention on will grow. So if you focus on problems, we will get more problems. We will see more problems. And looking at problems and things that are not working will take away our energy, will just leave us drained. And that's a shame. And my experience is there, you get a lot of more energy, a lot more energy out of what you want to reach, not what you don't want, but what you want. And so the ideal future, that gives you energy. That's something to work towards. And the introduction, we already talked about sustainable development goals. And I do exercises with sustainable development goals as well. And so with management teams to get a feeling of what can we do around these sustainable development goals. And like half of them are expressed like negatively. I get rid of hunger, get rid of not having enough money, blah, blah, blah. And it's not a positive thing to work about. And I think connective leadership for a part is translating what you don't want into what do I want instead? What's the positive thing I want instead? And focusing on that will get people, organizations, teams much more energized and focused on creating that than the I don't want this, I don't want that. When you're looking at your television and you have a program on that, that's not a good program. Let's get rid of that one. Okay, we'll switch to the next channel. And chances are that show that you see there is even worse. So
so don't watch TV at all.
Don't watch your group.
Yeah. That's you pay attention to grows on. And I'm not sure if we've talked about this before, but that's a fundamental belief of mine is, indeed, what you give your energy to grows. And this is where I like in design thinking type work, where they, with the double diamond work, they really separate the problem definition from the solution creation, if you will. Because if you stay too stuck in problem thinking, then you're just going to create more of that. And I guess it's a balance, because what I would call the challenges, the contrast, the pains, the frustrations in life are the signals for you to desire something different. But if you stay fixated on those signals only, then you're just going to magnify the signals. And so, say if you didn't like broccoli, it doesn't mean you have to create an anti-broccoli movement. You know, because other people do like broccoli. So let them eat their broccoli. You know, you're more of an asparagus person. And so, you know, again, that's okay. Now I know I'm not really a fan of broccoli. Personally, I don't mind broccoli myself, but just for the unique example. But I know that I adore asparagus. So let me go spend more time finding, discovering asparagus and having more fun with that, finding new ways to, I knew talking with you were going to go down rabbit hole. But I have to share. But when I went to university in Utah, and I was much to my delight that the asparagus was just growing in the wild on the sides of roads. And so one thing the students did is, you know, asparagus season, they just went out and harvested asparagus, and everybody was eating asparagus. It was great and it was free, which was great for students, and that was a lot of fun. So connective leadership. Is the purpose of that to have more fun at work? Is that the goal of it? And
I think that it's not really the goal to have more fun, but if you want to be more effective, having more fun helps. And it helps a lot. And it improves your life. So why not focus on that? And one of the things that struck me when you just gave that broccoli example, looking at leadership, what a lot of leaders are doing is fixing problems. And the way they do that is like you would fix a car. So the car is not working. So let's find out the cause of the problem, the cause of why the car is not working. And then if you know that, then you can fix it. And but people problems, if you are in organizations, a lot of the problems that you're facing are people problems. And they work differently. Like if someone has a problem, like I'm afraid to stand in front of a big crowd, then we can look at the cause of that. And the cause is probably somewhere in your youth where your brain were bullied as a kid or something. And when you know the cause, and you're no step further towards a solution, you know that, and you're still afraid to stand in front of a big group. So I think for connective leadership, it would be much more beneficial to get energy flowing, to ask people, what would you like to have instead of your problem of being afraid of standing in front of big crowds, and what would that get you? And where's the energy in that? And as soon as you know where the energy is, then people will work towards that because there's energy in it.
Yeah.
So an important thing for leaders is to ask questions, so the people that they're working with will tell them what it is that they want. Eliciting change talk. And if you hear change talk, then there's scientific investigations that tell you that they've investigated what is the effect of giving advice. A lot of managers give a lot of advice. And they've measured the effect of giving advice, the chance that someone will change their behavior caused on some advice that you get is like about 5% when it's really good advice. 5%. Yeah. But if people hear themselves saying, I would have to do this differently. I want to do this differently. I want to have a different result. If they hear themselves give them tips, then the chance goes up to about 30%. It's still below 50%, but it's like six times higher than the chance that someone will change their behavior on advice that they get from someone else.
I wonder if this applies to coaching and consulting as well. Because if coaches know the right questions to ask and consultants typically know the right answer to give, and both are valuable. I do believe if you're talking about transformation and behavior change, coaching is I think definitely the path to go, as opposed to finding, hiring some expert to instruct you. I think even if you're doing athletic coaching, which has a lot more skills training in it, there's still the psychological dimension, which is hugely important. Of shifting that belief set, the mindset of the people on the team.
Yeah,
you know, why are we here? And so, Connective Leadership. You've written a book about it, and we'll put a link there. It's in Dutch, and there's an English version that's downloadable as a PDF.
Yeah,
we'll put that there. And there's a series of sessions. I want to call them sort of webinars that you're mm-hmm. holding for many of these aspects of Connective Leadership, and you're doing that on a weekly basis.
Yeah,
exactly. We'll put the link to that as well. But as far as an introduction, say, hey, this is what, you know, Connective Leadership is this. You know, what is the elevator pitch for Connective Leadership?
Yeah. So the elevator pitch would be, if you want to create a healthier workspace where people come to work, have more fun, and are more productive, then the way to get there, scientific research says, if you want to have people engaged, there are some things that you should have in place. And one of them, or one of the most important ones, is autonomy. So that people have the feeling that to deliver value to the organization, to be able to blossom, that they have control of what they do and when they do it and with whom they do it. That's a very, very important part. But there are more things. So you have autonomy, that's one thing. But the other thing is getting feedback, seeing, hearing that what you're doing is valuable to others and helping others. And there is clear assignments. Like it's clear what is expected of me. And it's in some ways that's the opposite of autonomy. That's the right balance. So you want to have clear objectives. And you want to have autonomy on how to fulfill these objectives. And like coaching is an important one. And like the feeling that there is someone who cares about you and about your growth and about your well-being at work. So there are all kinds of ingredients that help to create a healthy workspace where people really are able to develop themselves in connection with others, in teamwork. Almost everything that we do needs teamwork. And social support is also that's why it's teamwork. Teamwork is so important. One thing that drives us is social support. We are social animals. We want to do things together. And we derive our sense of purpose from other people valuing what we're doing. So there are all elements of connective leadership. And what we did in the book, we collected a whole lot of techniques that you can use to increase the feeling of ownership of the way of working of teams.
The root of this, and I'm just checking, is creating a space for people to grow and develop and thrive. You know,
yeah, exactly.
What you just described is a whole system around creating the space for people to stretch and grow. And if the reason we are alive is to play in life and stretch and grow, and companies give us a space to do that, which happens to also generate some financial benefits.
To create a better world, to make a difference.
Yeah. That's a beautiful thing. But I was also, you know, a healthier workplace, fun, more productive. I hope many leaders out there believe that's possible, because mm-hmm. you know, there are some mindsets, and at least when I did my MBA, the intent of leadership of creating a healthy space and having fun so that people can be productive wasn't really how it was taught. It was kind of just focus on productivity.
Productivity, command and control to create productivity. And I think that the basis of that was laid in around 1900, when Ford was starting his first big company with, and he invented the production line.
Mm-hmm.
And his biggest challenge was he was building cars, and he wanted to make cars available to people with to everyone. Well, everyone with enough money, but okay, he wanted to make cars available to anyone, and for that he needed, he thought he needed mass production of cars. So he set up an assembly line, and his biggest problem was finding people to man this assembly line. And really the only people who could find to work in his factories were like people who had no education whatsoever. And so that was a big problem for him. And then he turned to Taylor. Taylor had written a book like The Principles of Scientific Management. And his solution to this problem was, hey, find some people who are really good at their craft of creating cars in this example. And so the engineers there, and making cars at that point in time was like technically the most difficult thing you could do. That was even more complicated than a steam locomotive. So really difficult. So get some people who really know, and then chop the work into minor pieces, that really small pieces that you can teach someone, repeatable steps that you can teach someone like in half a day. And then you can do that work for like, and one important thing there is that you make the work so small and the steps so small that the people doing the work have no idea what the purpose of their work is. Because if they know what the purpose is, they're going to think about it and they're going to try to improve it. But they have no knowledge, they have no education. So if they change something at the end when the car rolls out of the factory, it won't start. So you don't want people to think about their work because they have no knowledge about it. The people executing the work have no knowledge about it. And this idea of we have to chop the work into small bits, so small but people doing the work have no idea what the value of their work is, that continued to be my for management principle. We have an idea as management, we know well. We have a big challenge, we chop it up in smaller pieces. You see it in PRINCE2, which is a project management framework. If you see the descriptions, we have a big challenge. We have to chop it up, we may have to work breakdown. And now we have to create instructions for every piece that we want to create. And then we give these instructions to team leaders who chop them up even further and make work instructions for the individual workers. That's the structure of PRINCE2. But if you look at the work that we're doing at this moment, and most of the work that we're doing in organizations is knowledge work. You want the people to think. If they don't think, you don't get anything useful out of it. So that paradigm that Ford invented was very useful in his time when he had people that were not educated whatsoever, but that doesn't work for knowledge work. Totally indifferent.
You said that it worked in Ford's time, and that's definitely true. The thing, there's another statement that came up in Milton Friedman, I believe, which talked about the objective or the goal of business is to increase profits and shareholder value.
Okay, yeah.
Only. And I'm sorry, that's just bullshit. So the fact that he was smart, economist, fine, but the fact that he wrote it down doesn't make it true. For me, I like to see the profits as well. You need profit as oxygen in order to keep the business alive.
Yeah.
In order to, in a sustainable way, ideally. Do something for a customer because you're trying to make their life easier. So basically, you're trying to make each other's lives easier. If you're not making someone's life easier, then no one's going to buy your stuff. I hope, unless you're a complete monopoly. And doing that in a way which gives people the opportunities. And that doesn't mean nirvana because, let's go back to your example of the person who's scared to speak on stage for whatever reason. The only reason that they're having that opportunity to know that they're scared to speak on stage is because the stage is presented to them by this business activity You know, they're checking into this little tribe and someone wants them to go on stage. What a gift. What a gift. You know, and then make your decision. Don't go on stage or do go on stage, you know. But this is the joy of life, of being confronted by these fears and challenges and having the opportunity to overcome this stuff. And
having an environment where it's safe enough to experiment. So you can take the challenge instead of that it's pushed onto you.
So if we now grab onto connective leadership, and there's 36 methods or tactics at least in there and growing, I'm sure. If we want to leave the audience with one, maybe two super practical examples, like if they want to say, you know, because of course you can get the book, you can call Remy Ramon, you can go to these weekly workshops, you know, so this, and I think I don't want to diminish it, but the thinking of these tactics is in existence. So if people are really interested, they can go find it. Fortunately, mm-hmm. you've packaged it all up and have added your own spice and style to it to make it land in a lovely way. What is something that a leader could adopt and experiment with very quickly, just to say, hey, I want to apply some of the spirit of connective leadership tomorrow?
I would say stop giving advice. distributed decision making, something in that sense. What a lot of leaders created their organizations, they create systems to push information up and to get information to, as leaders, have all the information and make the best decisions possible. But I think that if you look at leaders' capacity, is like you don't have the ability to know everything that all the workers in your company know. And so the best place where you can make a decision is the place where the information is. So let's stop trying to push all the information up, but push the authority down for people to take decisions there where the information is. And if you look at the way that teams work and the departments work, it would help, I think, organizations a lot if the ownership for that way of working would return to the people who are doing the work. That would benefit in the sense of what you now see is that a lot of workers out on the work floor just sit back and cross their arms and look at their boss and say, okay, well, this is not working. What should we do differently? And the boss doesn't know because he's not the expert in the work that the people are doing. So it would be very beneficial if teams would take back ownership of their way of working. And you can stimulate that as a leader. You can stimulate that by asking open-ended questions. So not those sucker questions. Hey, why did you send those emails out yesterday on time? Huh? How hard can it be? really be on the lookout of how can I pull out the wisdom of my people that I pay to do good work, that I have...
I love it. Stop giving advice, because how many managers and leaders do I know that are basically fed, you know, complaining that so many people come to them with questions that they wish those people would answer on their own.
Yeah.
And then continue to answer them, which then perpetuates the addiction of the system to depend on that one person's advice. And so,
yeah, exactly. A lot of leaders complain about their employees not taking ownership.
Right.
That's a big management problem. My workers don't take ownership. But as soon as someone takes ownership, they say, hey, you're doing this right, wrong. That's it. So getting ownership, getting people to take ownership, based on that is the way that you're talking to them and asking open-ended questions to get people to get insights on their own is much more effective than telling them what to do or telling them what not to do.
And I guess, how would you, to make it very practical, so a manager stop giving advice, maybe some questions would be, what would you do and what information do you need? Could be nice questions. Mm-hmm. But there's also a mental decision that the manager is going, by definition, that person may make or almost guaranteed to make suboptimal decisions in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And so there'll be some waste. And I guess the manager needs to know that on the mid to long term, the decisions will become better than anything he or she could make on their own after the person goes through the cycle a few times. Once that person figures it out, maybe screws up a little bit. But in the particularly key moment on that first mistake, don't reprimand or scold.
Exactly.
Support. Again, probably not with advice, but all right, what happened? What would you do next time? All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Do that.
Yeah, talk about that. Yeah. You know. And perhaps one thing that you could add is, if you want to get rid of something as a leader, say, hey, that's not right. Think about, what do I want instead? And a lot of times it's you really want your people to fix the problem. You want them to be able to fix it themselves, and that it will go right automatically or improve automatically. That's what you want. And this is a point from Linda, my co-author of the book about leadership. She asks managers a lot of time, what do you want exactly? Do you want it to be done exactly as you imagine it at this moment? Or do you want your people to be able to improve this on their own? And then most of the time the leader say, I want my people to be able to do this on their own. Okay, so what are the actions that are needed so these people will find out on their own, this was not the optimal way, and that they will put their shoulders under it to improve this. And for that, they have to be able to make mistakes and find out, this was not the right way. They have to have space to experiment to improve, more than that they need advice.
I imagine a driver to bring that leader to still make the decision to say, hey, do it as I tell you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe based on fear, fear and uncertainty about his or her own position. Because it requires quite a level of confidence, meaning of confidence in themselves and their role, and if their boss is demanding perfection every decision or else, then it's gonna take a very brave person, or foolish, or both, and the line between foolishness and bravery is very thin. Mm-hmm. To create that space for the people that work in their area.
Yeah. I think it's a big strength of a leader, and the best leaders I met, like the best project manager leaders, they are able to say, hey guys, I don't know what the best solution is. Mm. there's a reason that I hired you and the experts, the people that really have the craftsmanship. There's a reason that I employed you. And so what can I do to help you really use your craftsmanship? And let's find out together what the best way to solve this problem is. And if you need any help, come to me, but we need your craftsmanship. I don't have the craftsmanship. You have the craftsmanship. So it's important for leaders to say, hey, I don't know. I'm willing to help, but I don't know what the perfect solution is.
So in addition to not giving the advice, maybe the reaction is, and maybe you could put this on the sticky note on their desk. I don't know. What would you do?
Go ahead.
How can I help?
Yeah.
This is never going to work.
This is never going to work.
Because, you know, if this is management, then what will MBA schools do? Yeah, they could teach this in an afternoon.
Yeah.
It's got to be more complex than this. There must be some sort of, like, I don't know.
Well, there's a nice metaphor for that, and that's what's the effect of MBA? And the effect of MBA behavior is Boricua behavior from the workforce. Do you know Boricua?
Boricua, no.
Sounds fun, though. Never heard of it. Oh, yeah, it's a winning party. It's like what the employees say when the new MBA is shut into the organization. As a new manager, has no idea about what the people are doing, and who comes in and is starting to give advice, and then all the people on the workflow say, okay, let's bend over. Here it comes again.
Well, I have not heard that one.
Well, no. So the new manager is shut in from outside. He just finishes MBA, like, whoop, he's shut into the organization. And for instance, in a hospital, he's shut into a hospital. And then he's starting to say, hey, let's do it like this, let's do it like that. And then the workforce says, like the doctors and nurses say, yeah, we've tried that. That won't work here. And then the manager says, well, okay, I don't care. I think this would work. So, and I'm the boss. So let's do it, this. And then all the employees say, okay, yeah, bend over. Here it comes again. And they do nothing with it, and is it like to boom. And then, like, 3 or 4 months later, the boss finds out, okay, yeah, well, I see it now. This doesn't work here. And then the same people say, yeah, okay, that's logical, because, hey, you were a manager at a book, at a publishing company, and now you're in a hospital. That's different. And the boss says, well, I don't see the difference. And publishing is about books. This is about people. You can open up books, you open up people to operate on. I don't see the difference. But actually, a few months, he finds out, okay, there's a difference. We should do this here. And then all the people in the company say, okay, yeah, well, nice that you've seen this now. Eh? You're now part of the company. Eh? We all, 200 people in the hospital, we provided the learning experience for you. We could have done that cheaper, but okay. Bend over, here it comes again.
Do you believe the MBA programs of the future will be essentially connective leadership academies, if you will, or I guess there's, because when I did the MBA, there statistical analysis is a skill, and also to know that, you know, statistics are never true. You know, they need to become very skeptical of statistics and how to manipulate them. And
never trust a statistic that you haven't falsified yourself.
Exactly. You know, so there's, you know, accounting.
Yeah.
And again, there's different shades of accounting. You know, some of the most valuable courses I took was in my auditing courses, to be able to discover bullshit and lies, mm-hmm. and in a company and just to see the patterns of so there are some very hard skills and some nice strategic thinking aspects. However, the creating the space for people to thrive, so far I didn't really experience that much.
I think there's one step before that. If you apply statistics to a process, like at an assembly line, then Deming has shown that the process has to be under statistical control. Meaning that those views were developed for assembly lines, right? You repeat the same step over and over again, and you can check every time that a car rolls out of the company, out of the factory, you can check, hey, did we do it right? And because you're doing those steps over and over again, creating the same product, we're able to take out all of the waste, and you're able to apply statistics to see where the bottlenecks are or where we don't have quality under statistical control.
Yeah.
But it only works in controlled environments where you are able to do steps over and over again. And if you look at industry, the greatest challenge of industry is, hey, we have one car, one model, one concept car that works, and now we have to create 10,000 or millions. And that's a big problem. But a lot of things that we're doing at this moment is knowledge work, and that's different. Look at software development. Software developers, if you look at the process of, hey, I have one piece of program, one functionality, an application, an app that works, then creating 10,000 of that, that's like super easy. Instead of we don't even think of it, we mean control a copy and then control paste, and then that's it. Or we put it in the cloud and then everyone can download it. That's no problem. Every time that an engineer focuses a problem, he has to do something different. Create something different. And to create a thing that really works, you need creativity. You have to be able to explore and see what do the users really need. And that's a totally different process than creating the same car over and over again.
Well, statistics can be used on the other side of the ball, meaning
of course
market segmentation and discovering potential customers. That comes to obvious mind.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a portfolio of products and once you have a sample set large enough, you can start saying, hey, that type of person likes pink software, yeah, and this type of person likes yellow software. There are applications to it, but I don't know what I in my mind, where you're thinking about business challenges, there is a rational transactional dimension, which is related to statistics and profit and money and all that hard stuff. There's also a very relational dimension, meaning how are the people working with their customers and with each other, and there's the dynamic. And then for me, there's also what I like to call an intuitional or an inner work. So how do you balance the measurable outcome of a business and the health of the relationships and the health of yourself? Because if you're having great business outcomes and everyone else in the company is satisfied, but you're dying inside, also doesn't work. For me, it can't be any one of these things. You need to keep an eye on all of these things and almost on a case by case basis, because as you said, it's knowledge work, it's changing work. Just to reflect.
Let's probably not back down. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, I mean, in every case, particularly if something is stuck, and I like to ask these kind of questions, these kind of coaching questions, when someone says, I'm suffering, I'm losing sleep, I'm stressed, I'm approaching burnout because of this thing, this tension, this dilemma. What I find it can really help people to say, well, let's look at it at a couple different perspectives and unpack it a little bit. But where were you going to go? with?
Well, I was going to go if we want teams and people and teams to take ownership of their way of working, if we want to have more initiative there, that they take ownership, then one of the basic ingredients that they need is feedback. I see a lot of people in software development, but also in business processes, having a very big distance from the people that are receiving the result of their work.
Hmm.
And the further that the people using what I am building, the further that that's away, or the longer it takes before what I'm doing has a result on the people who are using it, the longer it takes for the feedback to get to me. And if I get feedback, 3 months ago, you messed up. Okay, what am I supposed to do about that? Nothing. It just creates stress. Whereas if someone says, hey, but a minute ago, that remark that wasn't so handy, that, okay, I can do something. I can say sorry, at least.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah.
And say, okay, I'll try to do better next time. So having feedback early and often and see the results and see how people are using the product that you're creating and that they're happy with it or not happy with it, then you're able to do something about it, and that creates ownership. So I think an important part of connective leadership is how do I create that feedback early and often? And how do I make the job that I give to people so small that they're very quickly able to see the result of that? And there's an economic point at that as well, because the sooner that if someone creates something, let's say a new app or something, the sooner that's brought to market, the sooner we can start to capitalize on it, so earn money with it. And I see a lot of companies where software that is built like stays on the shelf for like months and months. And all that time we've invested money in creating new features and we're not getting benefits from it. And that's like a huge drain on the organization. That's waste.
Well, it's waste across all three of those dimensions, meaning financially it's waste because things have been built, it's an inventory, it's on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
It's not being exploited. Relationally it's waste because again they're not getting the feedback. Meaning they don't even know if it works.
Yeah. And if it works economically, will customers buy this? Will they get more happy from it?
Then maybe the most soul destroying is, then the person's like, well, wait a second, I'm showing up here, putting my life energy in this, making stuff that doesn't matter. You know, that's not fun. That's not healthy. It's not productive. So coming back to the reasons why connective leadership exists. Yeah,
exactly. And like, if we get back to the reptile brain, now we have our human brain, let's say the frontal cortex, who can think about stuff and say, okay, this will matter in 3 months. But our reptile brain, and that causes our emotions, that has no concept of like in 3 months. And it lives in the now. And in the now, we make no difference. So they get out of bed every morning to make no difference. It's terrible.
So, Remy Armand, we anticipated, and we were true to our
rabbit holes.
We're going to go down rabbit holes, and for me, that is just the joy of speaking with you and learning from you. I appreciate it. If people want more of this energy, then check out the show notes, or just go to connectivepartners.pro. And of course, there's the book there in English. You can download the PDF. And it's a testament to your style. I mean, there's a variable payment option there, which I just love. So it's not free, but it's pay what you can. And if you've been listening to this, you know there's value there. So maybe go a little more right when you buy the PDF book, or not. You know, whatever. Maybe you just don't have it in your pocket at the moment. And then there's also the weekly, I guess, webinars, if you will, in the evenings in Central European time, which makes it very convenient for people for example, in the US, because you can do that maybe over lunchtime. And there's also a full course, and I think this is a 6-day course.
Yeah, it's a 6-day course that it consists of three blocks of 2 days, where you really dive into these techniques. And I think one of the unique selling points of this course, no PowerPoint.
No
PowerPoint. I love courses with no PowerPoint and just getting into it together with all the participants and trying stuff out and sharing experiences. I also give safe trainings, which is really popular for having a whole bunch of PowerPoint, like 160, I think. I also give that training without PowerPoint. I don't know PowerPoint. I hate PowerPoint. I think if you want to learn, the most important thing is to engage with the stuff that you're working with and try stuff out and to share with other participants. That's the part where you learn, not where you get the theory in slides being presented.
I'll put the link to the 6-day course on the show notes as well. I know.
So what we did in the training is really investigate techniques that stimulate ownership in teams. And when you talk about teams, you can think about teams in on the work floor. But I think the most influential teams in organizations are management teams. And all the dysfunctions that exist in those teams, they really ripple through all of the organizations. So if you can manage to get your management teams working more effectively and taking more ownership and the people in those management teams really working together as a team instead of as individuals, that will make a huge difference in the effectiveness of organizations. And that's what our techniques are about, creating shared ownership in teams, in management teams as well as in teams on the work floor.
Connected leadership, creating a healthy space, more fun, productive, and at the end, it's all about healthy teams. So, Remy, Armand, thank
you so much. And about people working together and having fun together and making a difference together and growing together. That's what it's about. Yeah.
Growing together. Thank you, Remy, Armand.
Thanks for this conversation. Great.
Thank you for listening. Download the Simplicity Toolkit from ebullience.com to discover the power of the Simplicity Scan and Sprint. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite player.